I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. Today, it's Midday at the Car Show. The Motor Trend International Auto Show opens at this hour in Baltimore. Last night, I roamed around the convention center with a 13-year-old car critic named Rory Cahill. He can't drive them yet, but he sure knows what's in the latest cars and which ones are the coolest. After we hear from Rory, New York Times contributor Tom Volk, the creator of the Driven video review series, joins me in Studio A to discuss the road ahead for the auto industry and what to look for if you're in the market for new wheels. Plus, theater critic J. Wynn Russick reviews Long Day's Journey Into Night at Baltimore's Everyman Theater. Midday revs up right after these headlines. Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. The Motor Trend International Auto Show opens today at the Baltimore Convention Center. More than 500 cars, not all makes and models, but lots of makes and models, from the ultra-expensive to the very practical. Some run on gas, some on electricity, some on a little of both. Coming up in a little bit, a conversation with Tom Volk, a contributor to the New York Times and the creator of the video series Driven. We'll get his take on what's hot and what's not in the world of cars, and we'll take your questions and comments. But first, we stopped by the car show last night, and we wandered around with Rory Cahill. He knows a lot about cars. His expertise and opinions have attracted the attention of a lot of folks. On two occasions, General Motors has shipped a car to Rory's house in Baltimore and asked him to try it out for a week and give them his unvarnished opinion. In the biz, he's known as an influencer. So Rory seemed like a good guy to talk to when we wanted to find out which cars are the coolest cars at this year's auto show. Full disclosure, Rory is the son of one of our producers, Kathleen Cahill. There's only one thing Rory doesn't know about cars: how to drive them. Rory is 13 years old, 3 years shy of getting his license. When we entered the convention center last night, his attention was immediately drawn to the Lexus stand. All right, so Rory, here's a Lexus LC500. This one's got your eyes widened. How come?
Well, this is, I think, the best looking car at the show easily. One of the best looking cars on sale. And it's just fantastic to drive, apparently. It's basically a coupe version of the Lexus LS, if you really boil it down to that. But this also has much sharper handling, better chassis. It's more performance-oriented than the LS. It's more geared towards high performance than its sedan cousin.
This is a very sleek design. It's really a sports car look in it, and it's got all these rounded edges and beautiful slopes and dips in it. I agree with you, it's a very pretty car.
It's absolutely stunning to look at, especially because previous Lexuses have had this really weird design, which it's more angular than Sonic the Hedgehog. And recently, they've been making just designs that are really weird looking and not at all attractive. So this is really refreshing.
And what's going to set the engine in this car apart from so many of the other cars here in the show?
Okay, so the engine is a 5-liter V8, naturally aspirated, no turbos or superchargers.
What does aspirated mean?
No turbos or superchargers.
Oh, that's what it means, huh?
And that means, yes.
Got it. I'm with you, babe.
And that means that the response and the feel and the sound is much better than if they had installed a turbocharger. It makes 468 horsepower. And I've heard the engine before, and it sounds absolutely amazing.
And what should an engine sound like?
Well, an engine should sound sort of melodic and at the same time sort of screaming and anarchic. Now, this also has...
I've had a few cars that have sounded like that.
Sort of like, if you want to know what an engine should sound like, listen to a Ferrari V12. They should all sound like that. All right. This car looks like a sophisticated Grand Tourer, yet when you turn on the engine, It screams muscle car rock and roll at the sky. It's fantastic.
And by the way, when you look at a car, like right now we're standing on the passenger's side. It's a two-door car. We're standing by the passenger door. Is there an optimum way to look at a car? Should you look at it straight on from, you know, standing in front of the hood? Should you look at it from the side, from an angle, from the back? How do you look at a car to really take in its aesthetic pleasures?
Depends on the car, really. I mean, I think you get the best view of what a car looks like and how good the design is by looking at it straight from the side. But then you're also missing out on a lot of different subtleties and different intricacies of a car's styling by doing that. Now, with Lexus, you usually don't want to look at the front because a lot of Lexuses look really weird, but the front is where it's at its worst.
But the front is where the engine is, so it's not. It doesn't matter what the front looks like. It matters what's underneath that hood, right?
Yes.
So how about the inside of a car, like this beautiful Lexus car? This is a two-door car. As we say, it's a real sports car. If you have a bunch of kids, they're going to have to be crammed in the back, or perhaps a large dog, a Shetland pony. They just simply would not fit in the back seat of this car. But when you sit in the front seat of this car and you look at, like, the dashboard and the way that the interior is laid out, what kinds of things are you looking for to catch your eye?
Like the exterior, the design and the feel of the interior is really purely subjective. For me, being a vegetarian, I don't really like cars that have a lot of leather, and unfortunately that's really a big trend. However, despite the abundance of leather in here, I think it looks really amazing. It's probably one of the best interiors here at the show. It's not too stark and...
Yeah, so you're not into minimalism.
Yeah, I'm not really. I feel like...
You like some gadgets.
Not necessarily. I don't like minimalism in a car's interior, but I also don't think you should be overwhelmed with technology.
There's got to be a balance, doesn't there, between functionality, aesthetics, and just you don't want to overload it.
Yeah, I'm just going to bring in some analogies here. A great interior should be like a fine pastry or something like that. I mean, you don't want to eat hardtack, but you also don't want to eat, you know, genetically modified wheat products or something like that. You don't want it to be too complicated, too many ingredients.
Yeah, so it's a really important aesthetic judgment for the designers of these. All right, so let's move on. Let's find another one. Okay, so Rory, now we're in a Kia Stinger. You're sitting in the driver's seat of a Kia Stinger. What impresses you about this one?
Well, most Kias have kind of been a little bit boring. Great value, great looking cars, but they haven't been very interesting. This is sort of like a rival to the BMW 3 Series and Audi A4 or Mercedes-Benz C-Class. In fact, this is more like the so-called four-door coupes, like the Audi A5 Sportback or BMW 4 Series Grand Coupe.
Because this is a four-door car. This particular model is silver. It's about the size, I would say, of like a Honda Accord or something. Is this
a little smaller?
Yeah, and so this looks like a car that, you know, a normal family could drive, right?
Yeah, it is. But the one I'm sitting in here is a regular Stinger with four-cylinder engine. I'm embarrassed to say I don't know exactly how many horsepower it makes, but it's around 252. The Turbo 4, that should be enough for most people. But if you want a little bit more performance, you can get the Stinger GT, which has a 365-horsepower turbocharged V6.
And this is what we've talked about, that, you know, all of a sudden Kia, which used to be this sort of budget brand a few years ago, is now something that really is competing with the big boys, as they say.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the cars aren't cheap anymore. They're just really good value. Like, for instance, this is about two-thirds the price of an Audi A5 Sportback, and it's every bit as good.
When you're advising people about what kind of cars to buy, do you suggest you compare, say, three cars in the same class, five cars, eight cars? How many do you want to whittle it down to before you start making that very important decision about which one to buy?
I suggest they take the class and compare every single car in the class, because every car offers something different to different people. And even if I think a car is garbage, and, you know, I'm sure given a few hours I could come up with a more eloquent way of saying that, but we're short on time. So even if I think it's garbage, someone else might like it. Like, for instance, I don't like the Toyota Corolla at all. But other people, clearly a lot of people enjoy it because it's a very high-selling car. And, you know, if they just need cheap, budget, bare bones transportation, that it's a good choice. It's reliable.
And this Kia Stinger is in the same class as a Toyota Corolla?
I guess it could be. This base one could be cross-shopped with a Toyota Camry, but it's different in a lot of fundamental ways. For one thing, it's rear-wheel drive for better chassis balance and less torque steer than a front-wheel drive car would have. By the way, torque steer is when you accelerate on a front-wheel drive car and the low-end torque goes to the front wheels and causes the steering wheel to shake. Very disconcerting, apparently.
But this is a car that you really, generally speaking, really like. And in other words, this is the whole package. It's got a beautiful interior. It's got not too many bells and whistles, but enough bells and whistles to make it look interesting and to make it be interesting to drive. And the design of the car, the sound of the car, the way it's put together. Obviously, every car is a series of compromises and decisions, but they made, sounds like, a lot of really good decisions with this Kia Stinger.
Yeah, and you were mentioning it's in the class, same class as the as the Toyota Camry, except with this car, it could be cross-shopped with the Toyota Camry. It's about the same price, yet it could also be cross-shopped with Audis and BMWs and Mercedes that are much more expensive. They're about a third more expensive, but they're not a third better, because in this class, this car, maybe it's not quite as good as the Mercedes or Audis, but it's definitely as good as the BMW. And even those Mercedes and Audis, even if they're better, they're not several thousand dollars better. They're not much better. I mean, this is the first time Kia has ever attempted to go against cars like the BMW 3 Series, like the Mercedes C-Class, like the Audi A4. And for a first effort, for any effort, it's absolutely fantastic. I mean, the second time around, it's going to be even better. It might even beat those cars. So this is... You could buy it in place of a more mundane family sedan like a Toyota Camry or a Ford Fusion, but it also genuinely competes with cars from luxury brands.
All right, let's find one more car, babe. Okay, so now we're into an area that's got like 2, 4, 5 cars, 6 cars, and it's fenced off. This is the DuPont. Tell me what this is again, Rory.
DuPont Registry.
This is the DuPont Registry. So these are the real... expensive, ultra-rich, amazing cars, right? We're standing in front of this orange and black job here, a very sporty car. It looks like the Batmobile.
Oh, yeah. The McLaren 720S is one of my favorite cars in the world right now. This is just an absolutely amazing machine. It has 700-plus horsepower, and this is the future of supercars. It rides better than a Bentley Continental Supersport, apparently. That's a Bentley. And yet, it also apparently handles better than a track-biased Lamborghini Huracan Performante, which is a very hardcore vehicle.
And when you say it performs better, by what metrics do people judge whether a car performs better than A, B, C, or D cars?
Well, there are the objective measurements, like acceleration times, G-forces, horsepower, and then there are subjective measurements like ride quality, handling, fun to drive factor, and the McLaren is just absolutely amazing in every category. For one thing, the styling is beautiful. It's really unmistakable. I love the design more than any other McLaren I've seen ever. I mean, it looks good in pictures. I kind of thought it looked weird at first, actually, in pictures, but then I thought it looked good. But it looks way better in person, unbelievably good, especially in the shade of orange.
This is a really impressive-looking car. One thing that interests me, not knowing anything about cars, is that the windshield of the car is gigantic, and it really protrudes out into the hood space. The hood does not look all that big, so how can they get such a powerful engine in such a small area?
Well, they don't fit it in the hood, that's the thing. What they do in cars like these, and also the blue McLaren 570S next to it, and the white Lamborghini Aventador behind us, is they put the engine right here, in the middle of the car, in front of the rear axle, but behind the driver's compartment. The reason they do that is not only to allow for better styling, but mostly because it provides better weight distribution. It evens the weight of the engine out more and provides better handling capabilities.
Pretty impressive stuff. All right, well, Rory, thank you so much. It's been fun walking around with you. I appreciate it, man.
My pleasure.
Rory Cahill. We walked around the Motor Trend International Auto Show at the Baltimore Convention Center last night. It opens to the public today and runs through Sunday, thanks to Rory and to our director and engineer Luke Spicknall, who recorded and edited that tape. We've got a link to a film about Rory that debuted at the Maryland Film Festival last year and a couple of his video reviews. Come on over to WIPR.org/midday. Quick break, and when we come back, Tom Volk, the host of Driven, a video series about cars, joins me here in Studio A. We'll take your questions and comments about cars, 410-662-8780, or email midday at WIPR.org, to find us on Twitter at midday, WIPR. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us. Jump to the ground as the turbo slows across the borderline. Run like the wind as excitement shivers up and down my spine.
You're listening to Midday here on your public radio, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow on the program, Jane Miller, the award-winning investigative reporter from WBAL Television, will join me for the Midday News Wrap. We'll recap the high drama this week at the federal courthouse in Baltimore, where two former members of the now-defunct Baltimore Police Gun Traced Task Force are being tried on corruption charges. That case is expected to go to the jury today. I'll also check in with WYPR's Rachel Bay, who's keeping a close eye on the General Assembly in Annapolis. Plus, Tim Kreider joins me to talk about his new book. It's a really great book of essays. It's called I Wrote This Because I Love You. That's coming up tomorrow here on Midday. And coming up later today, theater critic J. Wynn Russick reviews Long Day's Journey Into Night at the Everyman Theater. But now back to the subject at hand for today, which is cars. The Motor Trend International Auto Show is underway at the Baltimore Convention Center. So are you in the market for a new car? Do you have some suggestions for folks who are? Give us a call at 410-662-8780, our email midday at WIPR.org, our Twitter handle at midday. WIPR. Tom Volk is with me here in Studio A. He is an award-winning automotive journalist based in Seattle. Since 2004, he has hosted a terrific series of car reviews on YouTube. It's called Driven. It's the first podcast to win an Emmy Award. For several years, they were on the New York Times website. Mr. Volk still contributes to the Times as well as to the Seattle Times and the NBC News Channel. And Tom Volk, it's good to see you. Thanks so much for coming in.
It's great to be in Baltimore.
And I got to tell you, your series, your web series on YouTube is terrific. I mean, and I'm not a car guy. I'm not a guy who gets like revved up the way Rory does or the way you do. But so I hope you'll take that as the high compliment it is meant to be.
Well, thank you.
It's very interesting stuff. You did one piece about the Nissan Leaf, the 2018 Nissan Leaf. Turns out my next door neighbor owns one, a 2017 Nissan Leaf, all electric car.
Right.
He's very happy with it,
sure.
He and his wife. About 200,000 plug-ins were sold last year, which seems like a lot of electric cars. So this is becoming more of a thing than it was even a year or two ago.
It is. They're becoming more popular, but unfortunately, they are still a very, very small segment of the cars sold, because last year there were some 17 million cars sold in North America. And I think most people aren't quite ready to make the jump. There's a little bit of what we call in the business range anxiety. Like your neighbor's Leaf probably goes about 100 miles on a charge realistically. The new second generation Leaf, which is just coming out, goes 150 miles an hour. And a lot of people think, well, that's not enough because my gas power car goes 350 easily.
So you can't drive to Trenton on one charge.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
But the reality is, if you do the math, most people don't drive more than 40 miles, 50 miles in a day. So realistically, if you drive 120 miles a day and then you charge it up and you have the same 150 miles tomorrow, you can drive easily 35,000 miles a year. And nobody drives that.
Yeah.
So it's a different mindset that I don't think people are quite ready for yet.
But it's seriously cheaper to plug it into your house and pay for the electricity than it is to buy gas.
Also, you don't have to go to the gas station ever.
Yeah.
And on top of that, Electric cars are a lot more, they're a lot more reliable because they don't have an engine. They don't really have a transmission.
So stuff can't break.
Right. And you don't really use the brakes because when you lift off the throttle, there's a lot of initial drag that is regenerating electricity to go back to the battery. So I have a plug-in hybrid and I brought it in after 2 years. And the guy at the shop said, you haven't used your brakes at all.
Huh.
And I may never replace the brakes on my car because it's kind of fun to drive without using the brake pedal. You can do that in an electric car.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, it's hard to know sort of what the future of the car industry is in that we've got the big ones like Ford and GM now positioning themselves as transportation companies, you know, mobility companies, not car companies. What does that mean?
Well, everybody's trying to figure out the future. You know, when we auto writers get together in our secret lair in our smoking jackets, we try to figure out what's happening with the, you know, the autonomous car, how quickly it's going to happen and how it's really going to be used, whether it will actually have a steering wheel or not. And the reality is, you know what? We'll see. Because everybody always tries to predict the future, and inevitably, we always get it wrong. So, you know what? Pay attention, you know, listen to what's going on out there. There are some interesting technologies that are trickling into the marketplace. General Motors has a great system called Super Cruise, and it's in their Cadillacs. And you can literally get on a divided highway, take your hands off the wheel, and drive to Tampa from here without touching the steering wheel. It will follow the car in front to a complete stop. It will take corners. It will do all that kind of stuff as long as it can see the road lines. And as long as you're looking ahead, because it has cameras that are monitoring your eyes. If you look away, it scolds you.
So it's not like you can sit there and play Scrabble while the car drives you to Tampa.
Exactly.
You've got to be paying attention.
You have to be present and accounted for. Mm-hmm. And that's as it should be right now until we get these systems that are foolproof. You know.
They've also, GM has also launched a service called Maven.
Uh-huh.
It's a car share. It's like Zipcar.
Sure.
But as I understand it, there's no annual fee. And one of the things they're doing is targeting people who need a car for freelance gigs, like Lyft drivers and Uber drivers.
Uh-huh.
So you get the car for the hours that you need it. You go drive for Uber or Lyft. You make some money, and then you dump the car. So you're not paying insurance. You're not paying all of that kind of stuff. Is that the wave of the, obviously, GM is doing that because they think of that as a, I assume, because it's a profit center for them. They can make money on that.
Mm-hmm.
But is that shooting themselves in the foot? Is that making fewer people buy cars?
Well, but they're still making cars and people are using them. Like BMW has a system called Reach Now in Seattle, and Mercedes has something called Car2Go. They're essentially similar services, but you know they've got their cars out there. And think of it this way: if you get one of those cars, you're exposed to it. So if you're considering to actually buy a car in the future, and you've driven a Chevrolet Bolt EV, an electric car, you'll say, "Wow, that was a great car. I would love to buy that." Or you know, with BMW's Reach Now, you know, you can rent a 3 Series or you can get a, I think it's a Mini Clubman or Countryman.
Mm-hmm.
You're exposed to their cars. You know, they don't even have to advertise it. You're in the car. You're driving it. You can tell whether or not you like it or not.
Yeah. I'm under the impression that young people in particular, the millennials that we're all so fond of, you know, trashing half of the time, are just not into cars the way their parents or their grandparents are, that fewer people are seeing the need to purchase a car.
Yeah, and that's maybe true. But the other thing you have to remember is that cars are expensive, right?
Yeah.
And so my daughter is just out of college. And so will she be buying a car? No, because right now she's living in downtown Chicago. She has no place to put it.
Mm-hmm.
But when she starts a family, or if she moves to Los Angeles, like she's thinking about doing it, she will need a car. It's easier to go without a car these days because we have Lyft and Uber. And so, you know, the car is a very personal thing. You know, and it's not just style. And it's not just the type of car that you need for your particular need. It's so many different things. And these days, we just have a lot of options.
Yeah, we sure do. Tom Volk, he hosts a podcast called Driven, writes for the New York Times, the Seattle Times, and other publications. I'm Tom Hall. We're talking cars today on Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. Let's go to the phones. Jeannie in Ellicott City, welcome to Midday with Tom Volk.
Oh, hi. Hi, Tom and Tom.
Hi, Jeannie.
Hi. So I owned a Honda Fit for 3 years. We leased it. It was an electric vehicle. The problem I had, I mean, I loved it, but the problem I had was that in the summertime, I could go 80 miles on one charge. And in the wintertime, I only could go 40 miles.
Right.
One time it was like, you know, 20 degrees outside, and I could only go 37 miles on that one charge.
Right.
And it was such a pain. Like, I had to figure out where the charging stations were.
Uh-huh.
I mean, if I was in luck, there was a Walgreens nearby,
yeah.
You know, with the electric. It was really hard to drive in the wintertime.
Now, did you have the option, Jeannie, did that car have the option of putting gas in it as well, or were you stuck with electric?
It was a plug-in.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if, you know, we bought it in the summertime.
Yeah. Surprise.
And then, you know, the temperature went down. We were like, okay, maybe we don't turn on the heat and we'll just use the seat warmers. I mean, like, all kinds of, like, trying to figure out how to extend, you know, like, don't put it on the B mode and just, like, you know, take their foot off the accelerator and try to get some charge.
Sure.
I mean, it was a real pain, so we didn't extend the lease because it was just so much planning. And
As you say, Tom, these things are evolving, right?
Yeah, and you were running up against, you know, physics and battery technology. Now, some of the things that they're doing now is that they will preheat the battery so that when you're plugged it in and then it's charged, then it'll bring the battery up to a temperature where it will, you know, it will be able to run longer. It's like my car, you have a little app, and I don't know if yours had it because I'm not terribly familiar with the Fit EV, but I can pre-warm the cabin using my cell phone so that all of the energy that I would use to, you know, heat the seats and the cabin is done through the electrical system in my house. So then I'm burning off less range.
Mm-hmm.
So they're trying. The thing that I always tell people is if they're not sure about an electric car, that something like the Chevrolet Volt, which has 50 miles of electric range, but then has a gas-powered generator that will take you for as far as you want to go is a really good choice. Like, you know, I get about 35 miles of range on my car. I've had it for 2 years. I am now on my third tank of gas.
Wow.
Because I barely touch the gas generator because I charge my car every day and I seldom drive more than 30 miles in a day.
Our good friend Klaus Philipson writes, I bought a Prius Prime gas engine plus plug-in electric with 25 to 30 mile range, commuting with all electric power, long distance up to 600 miles with a single tank of gas and a mileage of 55 miles per gallon. It's priced at $30,000 before tax credits. You do get a lot of tax credits for these electric cars.
Right.
And it's a good compromise, which works really well. A question for you about cars that are not electric gas hybrids. I mean, I have a Prius regular car. I don't know what letter it is. I forget. But it does have a battery in it.
Sure.
But I put gas in it. I don't put a whole lot of gas in it. If I switched, if I move the shift instead of to drive, but put it on B for battery and drove the 2 miles from my house to WYPR, could I drive on the battery power that way and save money on gas? Is that a good idea?
Well, I don't think it will allow yet. There's a button on your Prius that allows you electric power only. But if I remember correctly, it's slightly under 1 mile of range because the battery on a Prius is small. It's not intended to power the car for long distances, where the Prime is a specific model.
Because that is
Prius.
One that you plug in, and so it's a bigger battery.
Yeah, and so it is designed to have, I believe it's 25 miles of range, and then, again, the gas engine will take over. And then after the battery is depleted, it will act like a regular Prius.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so I really feel like a lot of people are missing out by not looking at plug-in hybrids, and they're much, much more popular than you might imagine. Almost every manufacturer makes some sort of mm-hmm. plug-in hybrid, from BMW to Mercedes to Kia to Chevrolet to Toyota. It's one of those things that I love efficiency. I mean, yeah. that's...
I'll tell you, when we bought a car, we bought a new car. Most of the time we buy used cars. We happened to buy a new car the last time, another Prius. And we looked at the electric hybrid one. The one, mm-hmm. the thing that worried me about that, the reason I didn't go for it, was it didn't look like the technology was super great. The range wasn't huge. But also... this may be just really pedestrian and banal, but I was concerned that there was no spare tire.
Oh, because, a lot of cars don't have spare tires now.
And that worried me because we get a lot of flat tires. I live in the city and we get a lot of nails, you know, and just I'm always, you know, getting the tire replaced.
Yeah.
But and if without a spare to put on, I mean, it just seemed like that was going to complicate that little exercise. I don't know. Is it just a weird thing?
You know what? And it's not just those cars. When you're car shopping, folks, look in the trunk because... there are mainstream vehicles that don't have spare tires anymore. They'll come with a inflation kit and a repair kit. That's sort of the reason why they have the
tire. Do they work?
Sensors.
Is that a reliable thing?
Well, you know, they don't work if you have a complete blowout. And so that's why a lot of the manufacturers also give roadside assistance for 3 to 5 years, depending on the manufacturer. The other thing is that a lot of times they're reducing that or they're eliminating the spare tire because anytime they can save an ounce of weight,
right,
that adds to the fuel economy. Yeah.
What about the new versus used? If someone's in the market for a car, uh-huh. you always hear this thing, which may be urban myth. I don't know. You can tell me if it's true or not, that, you know, the minute you buy a new car and you drive off the lot, it loses its value by a factor of 50% or something, 30%, whatever the
depends
number
on the car. A lot. Oftentimes, yes.
So is a used car a better deal? If you find a fairly low mileage car mm-hmm. that is broken in but not brand new, in terms of value for dollars, what do you think?
You have to look at it on a case-by-case basis. I mean, obviously, if you find a very nice car with low mileage and it may even have some of the manufacturer warranty on it, great, go for it. You have saved that money. The other person has taken a hit. A lot of times I tell people, if you go to a dealership and look for a car that's off lease, you know, a car that's off lease, the people had to take care of it because they will get dinged when they bring it back and they have to maintain it and all that. So there's a good chance that it's, you know, in good shape. For other people, you know, like we were talking about before, say you buy a very basic Toyota Corolla and you can get it for very, you know, very inexpensive. You know, let's say it's a single mother who needs extremely reliable transportation and they have no money left over for maintenance and repair and all that. So you have a brand new car, it's reliable.
It's warranted.
It's warranted. And so for the next 3 years or so, you don't have to worry about it at all. So you have to look at your own, you know, individual basis, you know, your own needs. I mean, again, cars are very, very, very individual things. Mm-hmm.
And the auto show is an interesting one-stop shopping kind of place. So if you are interested in a car, it's not a bad idea to hop down to the convention
center. Oh, it's the best thing in the world. You know, anytime anybody ever asks me for advice, I always say, if you're going to have an auto show anytime soon, wait for that. It's one-stop shopping. And here's the thing. Cars have changed so much in the last 5 years.
Yeah.
I mean, I've noticed it. It's a palpable thing. You probably don't know what you don't know. You know, for years, Kias and Hyundais were considered cheap bargain transportation. They're mainstream. They're very good. They're extremely competitive, as are the American brands. Japanese
Ford
brands.
Used to be this dippy, you know, brand. Yeah. It was your grandfather's brand.
Yeah. You know, the thing is this is a very competitive, mm-hmm. Industry. Everybody's making really great cars. Most cars these days are as good as the best cars were 5 years ago. And so it's really good to have an open mind. There at the auto show, you get to look at the interior, which is, you know, they keep improving them because that's what you see the most of, right?
Yeah, and you're not going to see that online.
Right.
When you go through all the pictures of them. Yeah.
Or, you know, it's like you had to buy a car under duress. You had to buy a car in a very short amount of time, you were telling me when we were off mic. And, you know, here you have time to look at it. You don't have to go from dealership to dealership to dealership, and you don't have to feel pressured. It's a really great way. And plus, you know, the auto show here, there's all sorts of things for the kids to do. They've got those little power wheel things that they can drive around.
Mm-hmm. I know there's a stack of cars lined up outside the convention center where that you can test drive.
You can test drive them. And, you know, sometimes just going around the block in the car will make you go, I love this car or I hate this car.
Yeah.
It's amazing, even just a short drive. After that, you know, when you narrow a car down, I always suggest test drive at least 3 different vehicles in a pretty, you know, at least for a half an hour and, you know, get out on the highway. Don't listen to the stereo. Listen to what the car is doing and, you know, see how the transmission is operating and all that kind of stuff. It makes a big difference. Cars are expensive.
Yeah, they sure
are. The average car these days is about $35,000.
That's the average.
Yeah.
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 Wow. You know? Because that's a lot of money for anything, a house, a car, you know, a fancy bicycle. Yeah, that stuff. Tesla. Elon Musk shot a Tesla into space a day or two ago.
Good for him.
But we heard rumors that he's not going to be able to, they are not going to be able to meet the demand for all those people that put $1,000 down to buy the Tesla 3 or something?
The Model 3, yeah.
So what do you hear about that?
You know, Tesla is its own thing. And I know people who own Teslas and they love their Teslas. You know, but Elon marches to his own drummer. And I really think what Elon is doing is great. He has made the electric car a desirable thing. You know, there are some 400,000 people on the waiting list for a Model 3. Whereas Chevy's Bolt EV, which is a spectacular electric car. I mean, in my opinion, the best affordable car that you can easily buy today.
And what's that cost?
After tax credits, I think you can get it for about $30,000.
Mm-hmm.
Terrific.
Now, you're saying that the average car is 35. That's
yeah,
that's
and
good.
It'll easily go 240 miles on one single charge.
Mm-hmm. So you could get to Trenton from here on that.
Yeah, but you know
although,
what?
Although, why would you want to go to Trenton? Yeah, there's a whole other question.
You know, I have never been to Trenton, so maybe that's why I would want to go to Trenton. But the thing is that Chevy is not moving 400,000 of those a year.
Right.
Why is that? Because Elon has this black magic about him that he has marketed the Tesla brand very, very well. Hats off to him.
Yeah, indeed. And hats off to you. This has really been fun talking to you. And as I said, your videos are just terrific. I can't recommend them highly enough.
Yeah.
So enjoy your little peregrination here to Baltimore. And
I love Baltimore.
Look forward to the next time. Thanks so much. Tom Volk, he's an award-winning automotive journalist and the creator of the Driven Car Review video series and the podcast of the same name. It was the first podcast to win an Emmy Award. We've got more information and links to his reviews at wipr.org/midday. When we return after a quick break, theater critic J. Wynn Russick joins me with a review of Long Day's Journey Into Night at the Everyman Theater here in Baltimore. I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to Midday. Stay with us.
This is your public radio, 88.1 WYPR.